Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
A whole bunch of people sent me this story regarding a Supreme Court opinion that just came down. And this is actually an important case. It's going to have very, very broad implications, despite the fact everyone's focusing on the narrow implications. And we'll talk about that. But the Supreme Court has made it more difficult now for prisoners to argue they had ineffective counsel. That's the narrow take. Ariane DeVogue and Devin Cole wrote this for CNN, but it's been widely reported. The Supreme Court said Monday that state prisoners may not present new evidence in federal court in support of a claim that their post-conviction counsel in state court was ineffective in violation of the Constitution. The ruling is a major defeat for two inmates who are currently on death row, who say they've got compelling claims that their state lawyers failed to pursue. In addition, this will make it harder for inmates across the country to prevail on claims that they received ineffective counsel at the state court level in post-conviction proceedings. This is a 6-3 opinion authored by Justice Clarence Thomas. He suggests that allowing such claims to go forward would cause unnecessary delays because we want our courts to be efficient and fast. Can't delay things. And he said the federal courts must afford unwavering respect to the centrality of the trial of a criminal case in state court, which is hogwash. So what we're talking about, of course, is that if you get convicted by a state court of a crime, you can appeal that and make it all the way up to the Supreme Court of that particular state. And if you get denied there, you can then theoretically appeal by going through the federal system. It's not considered an appeal, but it's in the same process. And you file an action in a federal court for habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is the concept that you are being held unlawfully. And your argument is, my constitutional rights were violated in the state court. And if you can prove that in a federal court before Monday, you could have actually gotten a federal court to order your release or order a new trial. And that happens fairly often. And you might say, Steve, how does that work though? Why? Well, United States has a constitution. Your state might have a constitution also. Most of them do. But the U.S. Constitution's got some amendments, the 5th and the 14th. The 5th Amendment specifically says that your rights cannot be taken away from you by the government without due process. And then the 14th Amendment says specifically that, oh, by the way, that thing we said back there about the government applies to state governments also. So a state cannot deprive you of your constitutional rights without due process of law. So the question is, who's going to step in and make sure that the state court didn't deprive you of your due process? One of the things you're entitled to under due process is the right to effective counsel. And that's what these people here were arguing. Bigger question, what about the other arguments people make that get them new trials? We'll talk about that in a second. Serial relitigation and final convictions undermines the finality that is essential to both the retributive and deterrent functions of criminal law. He wrote, in his decision, Thomas emphasized the brutality of these crimes. Well, we're not talking about whether the crimes are brutal or not. That's not the question. The question is, did these guys get fair trials? And I know people out there who say, oh, that guy did that. He deserves back up. That guy did that. He's got to get convicted first. And the conviction has got to be proper. He called, this is Thomas, intervention by federal courts an affront to the state and its citizens who returned a verdict of guilt and said that federal courts years later lacked the competence and authority to relitigate a state's criminal case. Despite the fact they've been doing it for decades and decades and decades, the three justices in the dissent called the decision perverse and said the court had gutted precedent. The majority opinion reduces to rubble many inmates' constitutional rights. The Sixth Amendment guarantees criminal defendants the right to the effective assistance of counsel at trial. Today, however, the court hamstrings the federal court's authority to safeguard that right. While the majority sets forth the gruesome nature of the crimes, the Constitution insists that no matter how heinous the crime, any conviction must be secured respecting all constitutional protections. The inmates involved were not at fault for their lawyers' failure to develop evidence, and they should have been able to get into federal court, the dissent reads. And no one's saying, by the way, that the federal court's got to rule in their favor. The federal court's got to review it. To put it bluntly, two men whose trial attorneys did not provide even the bare minimum level of representation required by the Constitution may now be executed because forces outside of their control prevented them from vindicating their constitutional right to counsel. Again, that's from the dissent. The Sixth Amendment's guarantee to the inmates is now an empty one. The case was closely watched by those seeking death row exonerations. According to the Innocence Project, nearly 3,000 people have been wrongly convicted of crimes since 1989. And since 1973, 186 people on death row have been exonerated. Ordinarily, an inmate can't bring new evidence of innocence in federal court when it was the inmate's fault for not having raised the evidence. But the Supreme Court has previously said that the failure to raise the evidence was due to ineffective counsel. The inmates could raise the issue in federal court. And better, what if it's the prosecution that withheld evidence? So I've mentioned before, I wrote a book called Drawn to Injustice about Timothy Masters. Timothy Masters was convicted of a crime he did not commit. Everyone now agrees he did not do it. Even the people who testified against him, the police investigated him, the prosecutor, everybody says he didn't do it. He was sentenced to life in prison in Colorado. He went through all the appellate process in Colorado and lost at every turn. He himself filed a habeas corpus action on his own. One of the best pieces of legal writing I've ever seen in my life. I was blown away. I actually asked him, who wrote that? He said, I did. I said, really? He said, yeah, I did some research. Put it together myself. And after a judge read his motion, the judge said, you know something, there's something wrong here. And a federal judge ordered a state court to re-examine some issues that he had raised in his action. And during that hearing that was mandated by the federal court, it came out that the prosecution and the detective handling the case had failed to turn over a whole bunch of evidence that would have helped exonerate him. You know, what are you gonna do? So it wasn't Tim withholding evidence. It was the other side. But if he's not allowed to raise that in the federal court, guess what? He's still in prison. Colorado Supreme Court, in a very close vote, but nonetheless, ruled that his conviction was good. This idea that Clarence Thomas has, that you cannot have an affront to the state and its citizens who return a verdict of guilt. Jurors can make mistakes. I don't know why anybody, particularly somebody who's been an attorney as long as Clarence Thomas, would think that jurors are infallible. No, they're not infallible. And I can also tell you that in later years, Timothy Masters met and talked to at least one of the jurors who apologized, said, I'm sorry, we assumed there was more to this case. Jurors make mistakes. It's hard to overstate how significant this technical ruling is for state prisoners trying to argue that they haven't received the effective assistance of counsel guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment. That's Steve Vladeck, who's a CNN Supreme Court analyst and professor at the University of Texas School of Law. It's usually difficult, if not impossible, to show that your lawyer was ineffective without introducing new evidence, since that ineffectiveness often turns on evidence that wasn't introduced. So in other words, your attorney who gets hired, you know, court-appointed, and spends 3 minutes reviewing your file, shows up at your trial, and does a horrible job of it. Horrible job of it. And as you wind your way through the legal system, you discover that in the file was evidence that your attorney failed to produce, or whatever. And so now you want to go to the federal court and say, hey, this stuff that my lawyer failed, no. We can't question the jurors who made that decision. Well, the jurors didn't know about all the evidence. No. The sanctity of the jury. We must respect them. Today's decision makes it impossible for prisoners to rely upon new evidence to prove the lawyer representing them in state post-conviction proceedings was ineffective. And my question is, while this is simply talking about the ineffective counsel, the same argument that Thomas makes here can be made about anything being raised in a habeas corpus action. Why do we want to upset the jury? No, the sanctity of the state courts must afford unwavering respect to the centrality of the trial of a criminal case in state court. He doesn't mention ineffective counsel there. He's just saying we've got to respect what they did. We got to respect what they did. We're in a hurry here. Remember this? We don't want unnecessary delays. So I understand right now some people are going to say, Steve, you and I both know this. There are people out there who just file stuff. They got nothing better to do. They're sitting in a cell. They got 20 years ahead of them, 40 years or life. They're just filing stuff. I understand that. And there's remedies for that, by the way, also. A court can rule that a prisoner is a vexatious filer and do something about that. I'm talking about the people who legitimately have a claim that didn't get aired out in state court. And it could be a lot of different reasons behind that. Ineffective counsel is one of them. What about prosecutorial misconduct? Because if somebody raises that point and makes it in front of Clarence Thomas, do you know what he's going to say? He's going to say, well, that would force an unnecessary delay, and we must afford unwavering respect to the centrality of the trial of a criminal case in state court. And he says, serial relitigation of final convictions undermines the finality that is essential to the functions of criminal law. Again, no mention of ineffective counsel there. He's saying that the idea that you're going to take your state claims and litigate them in federal court because it's a violation of your constitutional rights, it's a waste of time. It's slowing down the process. We got to respect the state court findings. In the case at hand, Arizona pointed to a federal law that it interpreted to mean that an inmate could not develop a claim in federal court that had not been raised in state court. Lawyers for the inmates at Arizona is misreading the law because the inmate couldn't be blamed for the mistake of a state-appointed lawyer. But the Supreme Court just shot that down. Now, one of the inmates in this case argued there was compelling evidence of his innocence for a charge of murder, and he actually got the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to agree with him, but Supreme Court just reversed that. So, compelling evidence of innocence. And I've mentioned before that when you go to trial and get convicted and then you file an appeal, there's certain standards on appeal. And there's all kinds of different things you can raise. But one of the highest bars, but the courts do recognize it, is what we call actual innocence. In other words, we're not going to say there was mistakes in the trial. We're not going to say that something was unfair to the jury instruction. We're just going to say, I can prove I'm innocent, which is such a high standard, you almost never hear of it. But if someone comes into court and says, I can prove I'm innocent, a court will often look at that and go, well, obviously conviction isn't correct because this guy proved he was innocent. How do you prove you're innocent? It's extremely difficult. And this guy is saying that he had evidence of his innocence and wanted to pursue that. So, no, can't do that. So after Monday's opinion was released, their lawyer said that the court's decision represents a tragic loss for his clients, but would also have wide-ranging impact. The court's decision effectively closes the federal courts to many prisoners with extremely serious constitutional ineffective trial counsel claims simply because they were unlucky enough to have incompetent lawyers at every stage of state court proceedings. And so, like I said, narrowly read, it looks like this is simply talking about ineffective counsel. But notice that the language that I read to you several times by Clarence Thomas is talking about how we need to respect the state courts to such an extent that we'll treat their decisions as final, even if it appears to violate someone's constitutional rights. So getting back the Fifth Amendment, you know about that due process you're required to have based on the Constitution. The 14th Amendment says, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." So the 14th is the one that applies it to the states. Nor shall any state deprive any person. So if you are in the legal system and you're working your way through the legal system and you've lost, and you make it to the Supreme Court of your state and you lose there, and your argument is the state is depriving me of my constitutional rights. Here they're saying it was the Sixth Amendment, your right to counsel. What about the other amendments? And so again, Thomas suggested that allowing these claims to go forward would cause unnecessary delays, and the federal courts must afford unwavering respect to the centrality of the trial of a criminal case in state court. I know some people are going to say, Steve, if you do the crime, you should pay for it. Absolutely. I agree with you. You're not arguing with me on that one. What you're arguing with me on, if you disagree with me, is I personally believe that the federal courts should be there as a backstop when grievous errors occur in the state court. And a federal court judge can glance at something and quickly go, you know something, there's nothing here. But what did that cost us really to have that happen? And yes, innocent people have been executed. Innocent people have spent their lives in prison. And innocent people have spent decades in prison and then gotten out. And look at Timothy Masters. But the Supreme Court now makes it more difficult for prisoners to argue they had ineffective counsel. Again, that's the narrow reading of the case. Ariane DeVogue wrote this along with Devin Cole for CNN. Chris, David, Pat, Adrian, John, Neil, Brandon, and Chad all sent it. Thanks a lot. Questions or comments, put them below. Let's talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. Life grants nothing to us mortals without hard work.